I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to episode 15 of Your Own Personal Beatles. I am and always have been Jack Belling, and with me as always is...
It's Robin Allender. I've been him for a while.
Good, how's that been?
Yeah, well, ups and downs really.
Kids, fair play. episode 15 today. Yeah. We're chatting to the amazing actor and comedian Gabby Best, which is a fantastic episode. It might almost be called a Yoko special.
It really is a Yoko special. I think it's kind of one of my favourite ones, actually. I just really enjoyed the chat. And I think we just kind of, you know, we did talk about the Beatles, of course, as well, but it was just good to kind of go in a slightly different direction, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And it is a subject, you know, she is probably the character in the Beatles story that tends to get overlooked and misrepresented a lot. So it was really good to sort of reassess that, look at her work from a slightly different angle. And then we went down lots of different sort of rabbit holes and talked about nightmarish musical theatre auditions. And,
oh, God. And Bryan Adams.
Bryan Adams and the All For One theme tune with Sting and Rod Stewart.
Rod Stewart.
And lots of other stuff like roasted baguettes and Joe Rourke and Scott Walker. And it's going to be one of the most eclectic podcast playlists that we've done. So you can go to Spotify and have a look at that.
The reason I said, I remember, because me and my friend Alex have a sort of running joke where, do you know when you just find a word funny? Baguette is just one of those words for us where we sort of occasionally text each other with strange requests about roasting a baguette. And so that's why I sort of mentioned roasting baguettes as if it was a completely normal thing. Forgetting I'm not talking to just my friend, but whole, I'm talking to the whole world.
I mean, that's quite sort of emblematic of where we go in this episode. So it's a bit of a smorgasbord.
Yeah.
But it's a fantastic one. So, before then, we can rattle through a little bit of correspondence. We've only got a couple of episodes to go in this series. So please do keep sending in your personal Beatles stories. We love to read them. And, we do read all of them. Sorry if we haven't had a chance to read yours out yet. But you can get in contact with us if you go to personalbeatles.com/contact, or you can just send me an electronic message by going to jack@homespunsounds.com. But this was a really nice email, so I thought I'd read this out. This is from a guy called Nathan Packham, who says, "Hi, Jack and Robin. Just wanted to drop you a line saying how much I've been enjoying the podcast. Around 2018, I finished working my way through the Beatles' solo catalogue, and with a sense of grief, I assumed my relationship with the Fab Four might be seriously diminished now that I had completed the timeline. What I hadn't accounted for was the rich, personalised treasure trove embodied by Rob Sheffield's book and your own podcast. Although the objective, in inverted commas, history of the Beatles, dates, times, etc., seems like a well-worn path, the variety and frankly bizarreness of people's anecdotes seems like a never-ending story full of nostalgic joy. I wanted to throw my hat in the ring with some of my own listed below." So he's got two stories. Number one, I got into the Beatles through my dad's dodgy tape copy, not an official release, shockingly, of the 67-70 Blue Album compilation.
Oh, lovely.
For all the otherworldly rapture I felt during A Day in the Life and realising my life would never be the same, I was swiftly brought back down to earth by the tape cutting out about a minute into Old Brown Shoe. It took me about 18 months to finally get a copy of the remasters, past masters, and listen to the whole thing and its weirdly quiet vocal.
Find out what happened to the bloody shoe at the end of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite bizarre that I didn't grow up with those anthologies, but regular listeners will know that they're a very common source of people getting into them. But why is Old Brown Shoe on it? I mean, I know they were compiled by Alan Klein, so he might have had other interests at heart, but it's a bizarre choice because it's just a random B-side and not a very good song. And if you think about
I always quite liked Old Brown Shoe, but that's because I went through, when I was getting into the Beatles, I made a compilation tape of every George Harrison song. So I kind of quite liked it. But it is an odd one to tack on to the Blue Album. Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, I mean, considering what your... It's basically everything off the White Album, your...
yeah. You know, Obladi does on there.
It is indeed, yeah. And he says a second one here, talking of the White Album, he says, on a similar note, such was my clumsy enthusiasm to hear the White Album for the first time after a dinner in the autumn of 2009. Love the specificity of this. Yeah. I managed to smear chalk ice on the remastered CD case the album aesthetics for that to occur with. There remains a stain there to this day, just to the right side of George's picture on the inner sleeve, a reminder that you should probably stay at the table, even if it means Wild Honey Pie has to wait. looking forward to hearing more from you guys. Nothing is real, Nath. Nice. Thanks, Nath. Great.
Oh, yeah. Thanks so much. That's so nice to get an email like that. That's lovely.
My White Album has a coffee cup stain on it. Which is really, really annoying. I don't know who did that.
My dad got the White Album on CD in America, and it's two separate CDs, so it's not like a one case. I've had a couple of nice messages from Harry Kidd and from my good chum Christopher Wright, asking me if I'm a fan of Martin Newell, otherwise known as Cleanus from Venus. Do you know anything about him?
No.
So he's been going for a very long time, and he's incredibly prolific. And he was kind of doing a lot of lo-fi cassette releases in the 80s and 90s. And he's a huge Beatles fan. And Harry and Chris got in touch because there's a new film coming out about him called The Jangling Man, which is a great title.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
But I hadn't really heard of him much before. But the one I sort of touched on, because I guess it's his most famous one, is an album called The Greatest Living Englishman, which is 1993 and produced by Andy Partridge of XTC, obviously. And honestly, it is fantastic. And it is basically, the first song is like, it's imagine if the Beatles had take the Rain Ear Beatles, specifically Rain Ear Beatles, kind of doing another track. It's so good, and it's like, it's not pastiche, it's kind of like a really lovely homage to it. And so yeah, thanks for getting in touch about that. There's so much to discover of Martin Newell's music, so I'm looking forward to delving into that and also seeing the film. So yeah, I can heartily
recommend. Stick some on the playlist.
Yeah, defo. And also, while I'm chatting about Chris Wright, who wrote in about that, I should mention his fantastic art and clothing line called Turbo Island, which you can find on social media.
Right. Is this your friend who did the very niche Dr. Octagon / Dr. Rocker pizza crossover?
Yeah. His new one is brilliant. It's you know, everyone's got an Unknown Pleasures Joy Division t-shirt.
The black
t-shirt with the kind of wavy lines. His new t-shirt is a white t-shirt, and on the front it's kind of a picture of the black t-shirt with the wavy lines. So that's really good. I'm going to get
There's
one
a really
those.
Great artist called Darren Cullen. Do you know him? Who
no,
has
I didn't know
a website called Spelling Mistakes Costs Lives, and he sells a Che Guevara t-shirt.
Oh, right, yes.
Which is a very similar idea, very cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Anyway, we won't keep you any longer. We'll be back at the end of the episode. Until then, here's the fantastic Gabby Best.
Yes, so welcome to Your Own Personal Beatles with Gabby Best. Hello, Gabby.
Hello.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure. I feel slightly fraudulent, but...
Yes. Why is that?
Well, because I'm sort of jumping on a Beatles podcast to talk about essentially about Yoko Ono. I'm well aware of that.
That's fine.
It's an angle that we haven't really covered properly. So
certainly an angle, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, that's good.
It's as angle as it gets. Yeah.
Angela Merkel. What's the background with Yoko? Did he start as a Beatles fan and then kind of discover Yoko through them and then think, oh, she was much better?
It's less romantic than that. I mean, I grew up with the Beatles. My dad was in a band in Australia. He's Australian. He didn't just sort of nip over there to be in a band. I grew up with the music in the house and dad sort of playing it and stuff. He had one of those, he had the sheet, there's like a quite well-known book of sheet, like guitar chord music, like Beatles hits or whatever, that it's quite a memorable book that a lot of people had in the household. He basically came over to Europe on a boat, as he likes to say, when the boats were made, when the boats were made of wood and the men were made of steel. And they would get, he would sort of, he didn't, him and his mate didn't pay for a ticket. This is going somewhere. They didn't pay for a ticket, but they would work for their board.
Right, and everything.
And they would make him play guitar all night and essentially just play Hey Jude, and the na 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 would go on for like an hour and a half.
Because
they had nothing else to do, presumably.
Yeah.
So it was
just
dozens of men on a ship in the middle of nowhere.
So he literally paid his way over to the UK with Hey Jude.
He did. So from day one, they've been sort of around the house and stuff. But I got into Yoko shamefully. Obviously, I knew who Yoko was, but I got into her through her Twitter activity, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
She is amazing on Twitter.
Yeah.
My God. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's...
Do you have any kind of particular favourite tweets of Yoko?
Yeah, I do. They are locked and loaded, yeah.
Oh, great.
Basically, I went through a stage of... I got into a habit of sort of... She'd tweet things... the things I'm about to read out, and I would just send them to friends with good luck, because it was this. I mean, my favourite one is, decide not to use one particular syllable for the rest of your life. Record things that happen to you as a result.
That's good.
Good luck, everyone. Another one, whisper the first word that comes to you to a person next to you, which I did do on the tube, actually. So
thought,
obviously, pre-COVID, when whispering was the rage.
When whispering was allowed.
Oh, wasn't it all the rage, whispering?
Yeah, everyone was just whispering to each other. The tube was alive with whispers.
Yes, such a beautiful history.
The whisper cylinder, they called it.
Yeah. God, I miss it. I can't wait to whisper in someone's face again.
Yeah. What did you whisper?
What did I can't remember what I whispered. Oh, okay. I remember whispering, technically slightly cheated, because I was in a group of people, didn't know all of them. If that sounds really sinister, and whispered to someone within the group that I didn't know very well. So it was a cheat, but I still did it, you know. I never did the one where she told you that brick walls don't exist, just run. I didn't try that one.
No, that's good.
There's a limit to my love. Yeah. Come on, Yoke.
Jaden Smith is a similarly gnomic presence on Twitter, isn't he? And he's a big Beatles fan.
He
said his new album was based on Sgt. Pepper, in fact. But do you think there's some kind of Beatles Venn diagram here of this kind?
Oh, my God. He's probably got that grapefruit. But have you read her the grapefruit Yoko Ono book?
No, I have not. No, I know of it.
Yeah, it's sort of like she's marketing conceptual art, basically. It's like DIY. Try this. Now, it's a lot like the tweets. So yeah. I bet you he's got that and he's just running with it.
Is that sort of early 80s, that grapefruit book, or is it quite recent?
I mean, this is where I'm not good on facts, just soul. they brought it out, a new version out of it again a few years ago, but I don't know when the original was from.
Is it? I think there's that Parkinson interview that she's on with John Lennon where they put him in a bag.
This is called Cloud Piece. Imagine the clouds dripping. Dig a hole in your garden to put them in. And you see, the thing is, this is not a book of poetry. Poetry to me is noun or adjective, you know. But this is verb, you know, and you have to do them. So when you
they're
just
meant to be an
actor,
a lot of these things that you suggest in the book.
Yes, I mean, these are all instructions. And when you just do it, then you start to understand it.
Yes.
It's probably the first one where people sort of slightly began to reassess her as like having a sense of humour and not this
she's
wild,
got such
mad
a sense of humour.
Yeah, I think this is the really interesting thing, isn't it? That there was a lot of reverse snobbery, I suppose, around Yoko.
Yes.
And it was very much that kind of, anyone could do that attitude to any kind of experimental art. Where actually there's something very self-aware and very like funny and knowingly silly about a lot of the stuff she does, you know.
She was so shrewd, shrewd with it. Like, there's the, in her Desert Island Disc, I think she said that when Lennon became a house husband, when he and he said, well, they think I'm worth, is it 50 million, whatever they thought he was worth at the time. So you better go out and make that. And she said, give me 3 years, not one, and I'll make it. And she made a fortune in those 3 years. So she, beyond, you know, the obvious, she knew what she was doing in terms of, she was, you know, she'd have been a menace on Instagram, I think. She'd have known exactly what
she
would
have been the original influencer,
My God.
Yeah.
I do actually often wonder what, because obviously now the sort of fan movement is so, it's always been intense, but it's so aggressive now because they've got 24-hour access to these people, that the girlfriends and boyfriends are quite often treated appallingly. So she was obviously treated appallingly, but I'd be interested to see if she was around now, whether she could have turned that on its head in a different way or whether she'd have got even more shit or, you know.
It's really interesting because obviously, like, there is sexism coming into it because Linda Eastman also got a lot of stick, but there's also racism coming into it as well, isn't
massively,
it?
Yeah.
You know, and there's also a kind of streak of kind of sort of slightly anti-intellectual kind of, oh, look at John being all poncy and pretentious.
He's got kind ahead of himself kind of thing, Well, they didn't help themselves to some degree with the whole the bedding and everything. The when they were, their honeymoon.
But, and there's records that, I mean, I was probably growing up quite guilty of sort of anti-Yoko sentiment, but mine mainly came from the sort of the solo albums that were just terrible. Slash very hard to listen to at best. And then just thinking like, oh, just come on. Why, you know. But then you look back at it and it's like they're actually really lovely, the ones where they sort of share the limelight and stuff. And the way that she sort of tempered his output and things was like did him massive, massive favours artistically. And he's such a completely different person in those interviews, like when they're together. To, you know, all of that sort of channeled all of that sort of anger and hatred and into a sort of positive way. And he just became a bit more sort of human, I guess.
And she says, Yoko said that he would have got there to some degree himself anyway. They like met on the same road. He was sort of heading that. No doubt she, you know, helped, but he was always going to go in a slightly different direction, I think. So. It's that awful Cynthia Lennon when his first wife said the minute she saw them together, she knew that they were soulmates. Like, oh man, pain, pain, but also
some of the lyrics that he wrote in the love songs to her as well, and you do feel a bit sorry for Cynthia. And he's sort of like, you know, I'm in love for the first time.
Let me down.
And then there's quite a lot of stuff on Imagine as well. It's like,
do you know the story about Cynthia when they were all getting on the train to Wales? I might be getting this wrong, or they might.
Oh no, but I feel like it's going to break my heart.
I think
go
it's
on.
In Anthology, but like Cynthia just got left behind on the train. Oh, you know, when they were going off to the retreat, and she just felt like that was this really symbolic moment. Obviously, she caught up with them, but just obviously, you know, she.
Yeah.
Broke down
there's a joke about that in The Ruttles that I've never understood, but that makes sense because there's someone who runs after the train and it's all in sort of sped up footage and she smashes her bouquet on the platform.
Oh,
stems
God,
on.
No.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because like, I always thought I knew the when John met Yoko story, but then whenever you look into any Beatles story, you find out, was it actually true? It might not have been true. But
the hammer and the...
Well, you're going into the Indica Gallery
the pretentious Gallery Soho.
What's the story about the hammer, actually? I thought mine's slightly different.
So she had one of the pieces was a nail that you could hammer in. I think sort of suspended. So I don't fully understand the logistics of it. There was a nail and there was a hammer. And she was already thinking how... People can't buy these. They won't. You can't buy them to hang in your house. So how am I going to ever monetize this? She was, you know, business head from the off. So he came in and said, "Can I have a go?" Don't do an impression again. That will be the first and last.
I
liked
it.
Can I have a? Yeah. Can I have a go? And she said, "Well, no, because I want to keep it fresh for the opening tonight." And he said, "Oh, go on, let me have a go." And she said, all right, you can have a go if you pay me, I don't know what it was, you know, $50, whatever it was. And probably wasn't that much. And he said, what about if I hammer in an imaginary nail and pay you imaginary money? Which is super tight from one of the richest men.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you'd expect that from George, but not, yeah.
Yeah, she found that very charming, apparently, so... What was your one? Yeah.
Well, it's one of the pieces was like very tiny words on the ceiling, on the wall with a magnifying glass. And he kind of reached up and it was the word yes. And he said this thing years later that was the first time he'd had that sense of kind of, you know, he expected it to be a kind of sneery, pretentious gallery. And it was that feeling of acceptance and positivity that he didn't expect from the art world. And it's a lovely kind of way of thinking about, like, we do kind of think there are gatekeepers of that kind of world. And it's actually accessible, and there's humour and love in it as much as there is in more traditional art, I suppose. You know.
I think I prefer that to the hammer and the nail, to be honest. Yeah. I'll take that one forward. That's my new origin story.
Yeah. And it does have a sense of humour to it, and I think that's quite obvious, and you sort of have to, like, kind of willingly misinterpret it, or like willingly evoke this kind of sense of pretentiousness or whatever that is kind of there, but it's sort of, she is joking, and there is a lot of the, I mean, there's, I think the thing in The Simpsons, there's a joke where she's in a restaurant or something and she's like, "May I, can I take your order?" And she orders hat with a cherry floating
ice cream or something. Yeah.
And then she had exactly that in one of her exhibitions sort of 40 years later.
She knows what she's doing.
Yeah.
Hey, Barney, what'll it be?
I like a beer, Mo.
I'd like a single plum floating in perfume served in a man's hat.
Here you go.
I think she can definitely laugh at herself. She basically, she calls herself a narcissist in quite cheery terms, but I don't think she's meaning that in a cruel sense, but she's like, look, I am the art.
Yeah.
I am sort of, obviously, it's a form of beautiful attention seeking, some of the artwork she's done. She's putting herself in the centre of it. So I think she expects a certain amount of ribbing. It just, the level of abuse she got was obviously for different reasons, but many different reasons.
It reminds me of when I was at school, probably about year nine, we went on a art trip to the Arnolfini, which is the kind of modern art gallery in Bristol, and we were such little shits because we were just like,
well, are in year nine is a real shitty
It was like we're being shown around this conceptual artist's work and we're just like, oh, this is rubbish, that's not real art, you know, stuff like that. It's terrible.
I mean, that's quite
there's that kind of default attitude, isn't there, sometimes, and it's hard to, sometimes it clicks and you're like, Do you know Marina Abramović?
Oh, yeah.
Stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much humour in that. And I think we saw an exhibition of hers, and I think that's something that where it kind of really clicked, that it was powerful, silly, it was funny. Yeah. The performance kind of made sense, and, you know.
Well, doesn't she work with Gaga a bit?
Yeah.
I think she's done some.
I think she has done, yeah. One of the exhibitions was a woman cleaning a skeleton, which is fine.
Why not?
Yeah.
Aren't we all in a way every time we have a shower?
Well, this is it. Yeah.
In a sense. Yeah.
And her big tagline at the end of that thing was, it's the process, not the result, which is kind of a very Yoko.
That is very Yoko. Have you ever seen, I think it's called Four. It's called Four? The Bums. It's just bums.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's obviously dividing the screen into four. You've got, and it's all about the cleft.
Yeah.
and then the producer after that, it was really successful, said, okay, I'd like you to make one that's 365 pairs of tits. Mm. And she said, no, I'm not doing that.
Oh, that's just stupid. She said,
yeah. I mean, it's completely stupid. I mean, in a set, probably would have got, probably would have done quite well, the tits. But money-wise, she could have maybe rethought that stance, but and then she just did one instead that was legs up an escalator from a fit. Anyway, so she sort of did something deliberately. Well, people say she did something almost deliberately boring as a response to, no, not only are you not getting tits, you're going to get like a bit of a leg in a jean that doesn't, you wouldn't even know it's a, you know,
that's
you're not having any flesh, mate, whatsoever.
Yeah.
So So she, yeah, I think she's quite canny.
Talking about the abuse that she got and stuff, do you think that's unprecedented? Can you think of any other sort of pop culture figure who's that? Who innocently got such a piece? Like someone sent us a really interesting email about a time that he interviewed her, and she was absolutely delightful. And in Japan, and he was saying that even in Japan, she is properly vilified.
Really? Is she?
That they sort of refuse to write her name into the sort of traditional Japanese writing, and it's all they use like a different sort of alphabet, which is one of the like biggest burns that you can do to to someone, a sign of like disrespect and stuff. Because she's from sort of quite a wealthy family, and her family were all ostracized, and her name was sort of mud in the village that she was from and stuff.
Can you imagine the strength of character to just not only survive that, but to carry on going, I'm just going to make exactly what I want to make. And I suppose that's the only way to go, isn't it? You would just have to become entirely fearless. If the whole world hates you, or it feels like that, then maybe there's a weird sort of freedom in that, because you've got absolutely nothing to prove, almost. You just...
Yeah. Mm. It must have been so tempting just to, you know, call it a day. You know, I don't need this, you know.
We've had a chat as well about how it's kind of still carrying on today. Obviously, you mentioned in Japan, but you know, the Craig Brown book, the 1, 2, 3, 4, and John Ronson said that it's a shame that he's still kind of doing these kind of old cliched Yoko bashing kind of stories and things, which is a shame. Yeah.
There's interviews where she talks about England specifically and stuff, and it's sort of really heartbreaking that she, you know, she talks about how she really wants to, like, you know, be accepted in England. She wants to love the country, but she finds it impossible because people are just so horrendous to her and stuff. And you just feel like, even though I wasn't born, you feel just very ashamed of, you know, the tabloid culture of it all.
I want to love this country because this is my husband's country, and aside of that, I think it's a very interesting country. But so, but it's, you know, I'll be a masochist if I love this country when I'm constantly abused, you know, whatever. Mm. And it's a bit tough for me, you know.
Her and Lennon made a piece called Rape together, which was, have you seen this footage of just a woman being pursued by a camera from a cemetery back to her house? And I think there's a sort of potentially the voice of a director in it who you never see. And the woman speaks in German and Italian, and it was essentially all about, it's one of the earliest kind of bits of art about press intrusion, as in the modern sense, press intrusion. And also, I guess, xenophobia, because the sort of language barrier. And yeah, and she said a lot of it was about not feeling remotely understood in any way in this country, and just being hounded wherever they went.
Christ. Yeah.
It is grim. But then didn't she go and sit on, when they were, obviously, Paul McCartney's thing about her sitting on an amp when they were trying to, in the recording studio or something. Mm. And she said that when he was singing Get Back, he was just looking at her. Or Lennon said he was just looking at her or something. Really? And it's like, probably is quite annoying if you go and sit on an amp. To be honest, get back off the amp. Just get back off the amp. Then go about your business.
Yeah,
there is a really awful other version of Get Back, though, isn't there? With quite brazenly racist lyrics.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Right, because he comes over all sort of measured about it now when he talks. Well, yeah.
Yeah. It definitely was. I mean, I think most of the sort of the theory of Yoko breaking up the Beatles, which has now been disproved by pretty much everyone who was there, most of that does come from what was filmed in those Get Back sessions, because it does look quite annoying.
But she probably was.
Yeah.
You know, when people are in love, God, they're so annoying.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Who isn't annoying when they're in that stage? You know, I probably, if I was in the Beatles, I'd be like, can she have a little song now? And everyone be like, no, obviously not.
You'd be like, she's just going to wrap herself around my mic. She's just going to be, you know, we're going to be using her hair as an instrument, like whatever you want. It's just pure obsession at that stage, particularly when you've got two people that creative on drugs. You're going to get that level of...
But I always really like her contributions to the White Album. You know, you can hear her on Bungalow Bill and Birthday and stuff like that. I think it's good. It's nice to hear these other voices.
I do have a problem with the howling, as therapeutic as it might be. It's really not a very nice noise.
What album is it where she just...
But you've got to wash the skeleton, Jack. You know, life isn't easy. You've got to listen to howling sometimes.
I think maybe there are less painful ways to wash the skeleton. I don't know. I'll try maybe something else.
Yeah.
So, Gabby, so your journey with Yoko started with the tweets, and then did you kind of work back and...
I heard about her from, you know, parents saying, like, "Oh, bloody Yoko." No, joking. He didn't say that at all. They're fairly ambivalent. And then, it's a while ago that I got into her sort of Twitter stuff, but then I worked backwards and started, like, looking into it more and reading up a bit.
I saw this great video you did for Metro about making a passive-aggressive playlist.
Yeah.
And one of the songs is Moving Mountains by Yoko Ono. So can you explain that song to the listeners who may not have heard it?
I hope you haven't heard it. Yeah. It will haunt you. There's various good tracks on that, but it's one where she's just... It sounds like she's trying to move mountains because it just sounds like she's in vast amounts of physical pain for... Mm. 2.5 minutes. It's sort of shouting, basically. Yeah, but do you know what? There is something... When I was making that playlist, I was like, I've got to get some Yoko in there, even though I love her. I've got to get her on this. And the more you listen to them, they do something to you.
Yeah.
Like, you do feel on a cellular level changed when you've listened to a couple of those tracks in a row. They're kind of, they're an event rather than a song.
Yeah. Well, I think there's, you know, it's one of those things where we need to be careful the way we talk about experimental music, want a different word, because you do experience it in a different way. And for a long time, a part of me was sceptical about... noise music or more extreme forms of music. But, you know, I've had some really profound experiences listening to that kind of music.
Yeah.
And there's an incredible progression that you go through. It's a real journey where you start thinking, how am I going to listen to this? It's just noise. I remember the first time I heard The Drift by Scott Walker. I don't know if you know that album.
Mm.
It's quite hard going. And but then something clicks and it's like, you kind of think, I kind of don't want to listen to ordinary music now. I just want to listen. I want to be in that world. It's not like you want to listen to it every day, but it's a process and it's an experience. You know?
And I suppose you have to really concentrate in a way that you don't with some other music, which means it's more edifying, I guess, if you can sort of lock into it.
Mm.
And also sometimes the influences, things that at first sound just otherworldly or, you know, difficult... you'll start to pick out influences and be like, oh, it's a bit of this or it's a bit of that, or it's coming from this sort of, you know, cultural...
It can
become much more of a... Yes, I suppose it's like an intellectual journey, isn't it? Because then you start... It's not background Sunday roast music, though, that's for sure.
Yeah, let's put a bit of Moving Mountains on.
Let's put that on. Give you indigestion before you've even started eating.
So what's your setup, Robin? When do you? Because I find it, I must admit, apart from sort of studying more sort of noise music and cacophonous stuff, I do find it very hard to find the right time. So is it something you light the candles and have some quiet time? What's the circumstance?
I think seeing stuff in performance is good. Like I saw a performance of Messiaen. Do you know Messiaen, the guy who used to notate birds?
I do very well know Messiaen.
Yeah.
It was my second year composition project.
Oh, nice.
Variations on a theme by Messiaen. Probably why I find it hard to listen to now.
Right. I saw that and I performed live. I can't remember what it was, which piece it was. in a church in Paris. Oh, and it was incredible.
That is lovely.
Yeah, maybe it's just the smell of roasting baguettes in the air or something that was really doing
it. Baguettes?
Yeah, I don't know.
You can't move for roasted baguettes.
Absolutely.
It was the gently roasting baguettes. I don't know, that was very moving. I know, the band Sun, I've never actually seen them live, but they're a band which have pulled huge audiences, and it's literally just drone music played incredibly loudly and with, really amped up guitars. And it's about kind of literally feeling the vibrations as they change chord and things like that. And, that sounds fun. So I think a live setting can really open up some more difficult music.
Yeah, I definitely get that.
You're more invested then as well, aren't you? Yeah. You're going to go with it.
Have you ever been to see any of Yoko's art in the flesh?
No, I haven't, sadly. I've just got bits and bobs at home, just got a little book, and I haven't. Nice. Do you know what? I was meant to go and try and see one of her films at the BFI before lockdown, because they've got two of them there that I just found out, but no, I haven't, sadly. I'd love to. I would not only love to do that, I would love to have lunch with her. Specifically lunch. Yeah. Not dinner, too intense. Lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2.5 hours.
Yeah, bottle
what
of vino.
Kind of set, what kind of restaurant? If she emails us and says, I'm game, where are you taking her?
I like the cut of her jib. I'll go for lunch with this girl. I would like to sit outside with her somewhere, I think. One of those, I'm not posh enough to go to them, but one of those beautiful sort of walled garden restaurants, one of those very exclusive ones.
Like in a Woody Allen film.
But yeah,
I don't know, do they actually exist?
Oh, I think there's a few of them, but not in my world. But I'd want the whole place cleared, so no one else can be in there.
No background chatter.
Nothing, thank you. Mm. One carefully selected waiter, and then that is it. Just Yokes and me for pushing 4 hours if she'll have it. I'll obviously be dressed like that. an homage. She can come in whatever she likes.
Yeah.
There'll be an agenda, and then we'll just chew the fat.
I don't know. Are you, because we've often talked about meeting heroes, and if you ever had the opportunity to meet a Beatle, but you definitely would jump at the chance. You wouldn't,
because I don't think I'm expecting her to be lovely to me.
Yeah,
I think there's other people where you're like, oh, I don't want that illusion shattered, because in my head we're very close friends, and we regularly get together for a curry, Graham Norton. But with Yoko, I think it would be. I'd kind of be going into gentle battle, I think, to meet her. I'd be like, I don't expect you to like me. I just would like to pick your brain if you'll let me for a few hours. And she could. I would be quite disappointed if she was too affable, actually.
Yeah.
Sort of not what you want from Yoko Ono, is it?
Yeah, if they're asking about your family and things.
Nah, mate. Nah, you're not bothered about that.
We've had a few emails from people who have met Yoko, and they've all, every single one has said that she's absolutely delightful.
That's obviously that's even okay. I'll take that, but generally, quite chatty.
There was one guy who I was struggling to find this email, so I'm very sorry because I can't remember who sent it in. But one guy who interviewed her in Japan, and he lived in Japan, but he's an English guy, and he's like, "Oh, hiya," and she's like, "Oh, you're English," and he's like, "Yeah," and she's like, "Oh, I used to go out with an English guy."
Wow,
that's so good.
Beautiful understanding,
that's great.
And then we had another guy who wrote in who used to be a manager at the Dakota Building and said that he bumped into her at a garden party and she was absolutely delightful. So there you go.
She might be disappointed. As well. That's not disappointed, just pleasant. Nice. That's delightful. Yeah, how would I take that if she was nice? I'd be spooked.
Is it a bit like wanting... I'd kind of want to meet Van Morrison and for him to be an arsehole. So you can sort of have your... but then you can have your, Van Morrison arsehole story, his actual asshole. Sorry,
that's a different kind of anecdote. you want that though. You want it to be almost worse than the ones you've heard, because it's like top trumps.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Before we go to more Yoko deeper cuts, I really wanted to mention on that Metro playlist, you also mentioned a song which I hadn't even thought about since 1993, which is the theme song from the Three Musketeers film.
Absolute tune.
Can you explain that?
It is Rod Stewart, Sting, and oh my God, I've forgotten who the...
Brian Adams?
Brian Adams, my God. Yeah, Rod Stewart,
the
Sting,
Holy
and Brian
Trinity.
Adams.
Yeah.
I mean... Come on now.
But that's so weird. Like, I literally hadn't thought of that song and then it all came flooding back. Yeah. But yeah, carry on.
Huge song. I remember, like, it's a song I hadn't thought of for years and years, but the second I heard it again, I was like, I know every word. Why do I know every word of this? Presumably because it was massive for about 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the three of them. The video is also wonderful. They're just having a real time of it in a shed somewhere.
Oh, sounds nice.
Wearing some great jackets around a piano. Yeah, it's a big kind of cheesy ballad.
Yeah. And it's very sort really of cynically great. Put together because it's so obviously like, you know, we're going to do whatever the one that was number one for, was it 3 or 4 years? Everything I do, I do for you.
Yeah,
because we've got another swashbuckling, you know, family film. So what's better than Brian Adams? Brian Adams and Sting. What's better than Brian Adams and Sting?
I wondered if they'd mixed up the offers for it and it was meant to be one of them.
Yeah.
But they backed the offer to all three of them at the same time. It's like, shit. What are we...
Yeah. They'd accidentally CC'd instead of BCC'ing.
Yeah.
They all want it.
The song is too strong.
But wait, it's the Three Musketeers.
Beautiful.
Maybe they had to kick out, like, you know, Robert Palmer or something.
Yeah, who else was in the running for that? Or any of them that are on the B list?
I would say Rod Stewart's a bit of an outsider.
Seal would have been kind of riding high on Kiss from a Rose, wouldn't he, at that era, in that era?
Yeah, you might be right, but I feel like maybe he'd have been like, nah.
Maybe he listened to the song.
My buckle has been swashed.
It's probably not a million miles away from something Paul McCartney might have done, to be honest, in the early 90s. Yeah. Let's make it
awful. Paul McCartney did write one of my least favourite ever songs.
The Frog song.
Oh, the Frog. Wow.
Who was it who said that was their introduction to the Beatles the other day? Oh, Hazel Wilde we had on the other day. So. One of her favourite ones. I still don't think I've ever heard the Frog chorus all the way through. Ever.
Good.
I wouldn't be able to sort of hum it.
Oh, it's not... I can't do it. It sounds like a protracted burp to me.
The cock frorus. Yeah. I don't mind it.
I mean, it's not horrific, but it slightly grates.
A bit grating.
So we get from Moving Mountains then. Can you recommend some other Yoko deep cuts that we might not be aware of?
Yoko's music is not actually my fave thing. But I'll get that. I'm going
to
find
the other one.
Although she did train when she was young. Well, they say trained. I love that. They would say trained in music when they were younger. They probably had like 6 piano lessons when they say that about
played
people.
Played the recorder. Like,
exactly. We've all played the recorder. Seventh Floor is quite... Mm-hmm. That's another one that nearly made it onto the playlist.
Oh, cool.
Is that sort of similarly alarming?
It's not as... I've given my Yoko. I didn't mean to give it so freely. And then where's that? I've got to remind myself of the other one that is actually really... Watching the Dawn.
The stars were gone. We were huddling together. Watch the dawn. They say it's coming, but I don't see it's coming yet. They let the earth weep while our children sleep.
Oh, okay. That sounds quite melodic. Yeah. What era
that
is that?
Nice.
I'm going to give that a go.
Do I know what era that is?
We'll do a
it's
playlist.
The Plastic
of
Ono Band. I mean, it's later in life.
Right,
it's,
okay.
It's
2014. Was it that album that?
Yeah, it's the same one. 2013. Right. It says here. So yeah. But that's cool. that's the most tuneful of that lot. I mean, there's a few good ones on it. I rarely listen to the whole thing the whole way through, to be honest. Because it's a bit of an ordeal.
It's going to be a great playlist because we always do a playlist after each episode. So this one should be quite an interesting one.
You've got to put Moving Mountains on it because I think it's the fairest rep.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. And it's a lot like when she went and did the shouting show.
Yeah.
You know, she did that.
Yes, yeah. It's going to be the only playlist that has Sun and the Frog Chorus on, I think. But maybe not. I don't know. So what's your background, Gabby, and is music kind of part of your performance?
I just became very aware my literal background is my washing hanging up, and I'm suddenly quite embarrassed about that.
That's a great
three pairs of knickers.
So you start talking about your background in a Zoom job interview, and
to your left there's a my family, my dad's very musical. My granddad was a pianist in Australia and a choir master. And did loads of music and used to write music for Australian radio and stuff like that. So he was very musical. My dad and his brother were in a band called The Band, NNED, in Australia.
Nice. Same as the band from the EastEnders, wasn't it? The band in EastEnders was called The Band.
My dad's 148, though, so he probably beat them to it. He's not 100. He's not. He's a spring chicken. And then I was sort of he raised me on, I mean, God, bloody everything. It's lots of the Eagles, lots of Dylan, lots of Beatles. And then my mum was heavily into American songbooks and Archer, Ella Fitzgerald, which I was, I mean, I'm still, so my heart is, so yeah, grew up on a lot of that stuff. And then, I played the piano for a bit, but I never learned to read music, so I was doing it all by ear. And then I got to grade 7, it was, and I was busted because I could no longer just pick it up.
Wow.
And my teacher had to turn to me and say, you can't really read music, can you? I was like,
well, surely if you got to grade 7 and you can't read music, they should just put you automatically to grade 9 because it's like, well, you've done very well so far.
But I did hit a wall where suddenly it just was obviously everything was taking 10 times longer and, you know.
Yeah. I had a similar thing with my piano playing career when I realised that I actually just was learning everything by like muscle memory very, very slowly and like couldn't sight read for shit.
But you went on to do music, obviously, so...
I did, but I'm a terrible piano player.
I bet you're not.
I'm very good at reading I don't know, it's a weird one. I just find it very hard to read complicated piano music. It's weird because I've done orchestration and stuff, so I should be able to read like 32 lines of score at the same time, but I just can't process that amount of information ahead of where you are. Maybe it's because I've got a bonk eye, so I tend to
I find
it very hard. That's the medical term, bonk eye. And I can't sort of follow, I like lose my place quite easily following like notes along.
That's amazing, then, though, that you've got that far whilst finding that element of it quite difficult.
I didn't even realise that. I thought everyone did it like that until I met proper pianists who could sight read, you know, Rachmaninoff concertos, and you're like, right, this is not really where I am.
Right.
But,
I think I still think that's the most guitar. Magical thing in the world, seeing someone just sight read an incredibly... It's just...
Yeah. And
amazing.
Like, transposing, I always find, is the... If you watch someone sight read something and play it in a different key, that is like...
Witchcraft.
That's superhuman. Yeah, witchcraft.
There's an amazing documentary on the radio recently about John Clare, the poet John Clare.
Oh,
and he used to write, you know, folk melodies, and he wrote down folk melodies he'd heard. And the violinist kind of went to where he's buried in Northampton I think it's near Northampton, and like played one of these jigs from John Clare's handwriting. And it was incredible. It was like coming alive, you know. There's something really magical about that, isn't there?
Oh,
it's
so impressive. Yeah, it is superhuman, really.
Did you ever play in any bands or anything like that, or you just...
No, I sort of went musical theatre for a while.
Right.
Did lots of that. And then realised you'd probably have to be able to dance to about grade 8. And don't get me wrong, I love a dance, but I can't get my leg up around my ear hole behind my neck. So I was like, well, that's not going to work unless Sondheim finds me.
And were you singing as well? Were you kind of singing?
Yeah, I've always sung. I mean, I'm proud of the fact I've never shoehorned my singing into my comedy. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but I've been so tempted so many times. And like,
I was watching some Marijana, the character. Sorry, Mariana. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, do you mind?
Yeah, so sorry.
How dare you?
And John Clare was from Helpston, not Northampton. Carry on.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything, but I was
fucking up left, right, and centre. I just haven't.
The dancing element of the sort of triple threat is definitely the hardest to pull off, I think. I would say the worst moment of my entire life was when I got basically pressured into going for an audition at the National Youth Music Theatre.
Oh my God, yes.
So I had these like little show tune songs that I really didn't like. I was probably about 13 or something. And I did these songs and I think I must have done them quite well because they put me through to... And then they were like, and now... can you show us some of your dancing?
Oh, God.
But I had no idea that there was any dancing involved. So I was like,
you're actually blushing, Jack.
I know. Thinking about it now makes me feel sick. So I had to pretend, I had to improvise a dance and make it look like it was something that I'd been working
on. Fucking hell.
Oh, my God.
And it made me want to crawl up and fall and die.
At uni, me and my friend Tom went through a phase of being into breakdancing. The 90s.
Yeah, at least that's cool. It's not like from Cats.
It's not cool if you can't do it.
But then someone we knew... Yeah, exactly. And then someone we knew said, I'm going to this like dance class. And we thought it was going to be a breakdancing class, but it was literally like a kind of leotard.
Could have been your Billy Elliot moment.
That could have
changed everything.
Oh, God,
for you.
I'm going red now.
You're both quite red.
What is it about dance that's embarrassing? Or dance?
I think it's that thing of at that young age to be in any kind of public humiliation, particularly involving your own body, is just. Mm. Horrific, isn't it?
A good way of kind of getting processing this embarrassment might be if you try and talk us through step by step exactly what your dance was.
we'd like to see it. It's not for the benefit of anyone listening, but we'd quite like to see the routine.
If someone donates £1,000 to the podcast, then I'll record a video of it for you. And
there you are. That's
there you go. Oh, got any eccentric millionaires or misanthrope?
I remember I had to do a when I left. Because I went to uni and then I went to drama school, did just a postgrad for 1 year, not musical theatre, just acting. And I got sent for a musical theatre audition when I came out, just one. They said, they were like, just go for this. It was for the lead in Love Story. I mean, horrific casting for me. And it's the only musical theatre audition I've ever been to, but they were all sort of belting in the corridors, limbering up in the corridors. It was proper fame. Yeah. And I sort of waddled in a mac because it was pissing it down outside, like absolutely like soggy fringe, you know, this limp bit of sheet music. And waited for ages, went in, sung the song, properly, because I was so nervous, you know, fully wobble. And then left, said thank you very much, goodbye, and walked into a cleaning cupboard and shut the door behind me and didn't realise it wasn't the exit. I stood in there. I realised it was getting darker, but just thought...
And you're still in there today.
I'm recording this from inside the cupboard. Yeah. I've never left. Yeah. I haven't psychologically ever left. And I just heard, oh, no, darling, that's a cupboard.
Oh, Jesus.
I went, yep, just, yep, going out now. Yeah, yeah.
Do you know that... on one of the Adam Buxton, I think on Adam and Joe, he's talking about doing an audition where he has to kind of pretend he's
kind of kissing someone. And he had to pretend he was kissing someone. And he said, and Adam Buxton said, well, this is a bit kind of awkward. There's no one here. And they said, well, you could try acting.
Because obviously miming a snog with someone who's not there is is required.
Yeah.
That's a real...
Fucking hell, yeah. Oh, glad I'm
God,
not.
Horrendous.
Oh, I mean, hideous things.
Yeah.
Hideous things.
We haven't really talked about the Beatles that much. Could you do it?
I should probably. Yeah, I feel like I've gone way off topic. Sorry.
No, it's our fault. We've been rambling away. But do you have some kind of favourite Beatles memories? Let's go in that direction, maybe.
I mean, one of my best mates, who I've known since I was like 14. She lives in Madrid now, but she was obsessed with the Beatles, so I have huge memories of her throughout our teens. Just when she sings, she really goes for it. It's proper like neck veins, and she'd just get merry at party and then just be sort of facing the wall singing, you know, In My Life or Here, There and Everywhere at full volume. So just on her own for like 12 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm one of them.
She'd be very good on this. She'd cry multiple times. She can't talk about them without getting very emotional. Mm. And just sort of school concerts and things. Like when I'm 64 at the Royal Festival Hall in Croydon, belting that out when I was about 11. Nice. Not on my own, there was about 200 of us. Yeah. But, no fact. I used to tour quite a lot at the age of 11. I had a Vegas residency. Belting that one out and sort of family party. Yeah, I mean, they just run through everything, really, don't they? And then I have insomnia quite badly, and I got obsessed with Golden Slumbers for a long time, just because I also think that is the most beautiful song. Mm. But I got quite obsessed with that song for a while.
Do you listen to it in the sequence of the end of Abbey Road, though? Because it's very nice. It's going to send you to sleep and then wake you up with quite a major jolt.
No. Not to sleep to, but...
oh, right, I see.
Writing.
Beautiful, Golden Slumbers, isn't it? Wasn't it based on a nursery? Oh, it's based on an old book of poems or something.
An old poem. Yeah. And they changed a few of the words or something.
Yeah. Mm. It's just got on those lovely McCartney twists of the... You know, it's just beautiful and catchy and such a hook.
Yeah, and then his vocal going from sort of sweet to raw.
I think if I could keep 10 seconds of Beatle tape to take, you know, to rescue from the fire, it would be that, I think. That second verse of Golden Slumbers is so disgustingly beautiful.
It's one of those ones that, I mean, there's a lot of music like this, so it's stating the obvious, but one of those ones that makes me well up every single time.
Yeah.
You know, even when I know it's coming, even when I've gone for it.
I've got goosebumps just thinking about it.
Yeah. It's such a clever chord, and it's the... The way that, and You Never Give Your Money, which is all based around that, like, A minor thing, is just, you know.
Oh.
They must have been very happy when they thought they were going to end it all with that.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
And then the other one I got quite obsessed with was Sexy Sadie for a while. I love that song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I sort of thought I was the only one in the world who was like, this is Radiohead! Because, you know, it's Karma Police. They sampled
it's a similar chord.
Oh, right.
I remember getting very excited about it and then Googling it, like, oh, yes, it's a well-known fact.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, Oh, good, I do feel,
So it's sampled at the in
or it's inspired it. I don't know if it's not sampled,
I think it's the same.
Oh, yeah, it's got a similar feel, yeah.
Yeah,
but I was well into that song for a bit.
That piano thing in the bridge, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you won't be able to unhear it now.
Yeah. They were listening to that's one. I remember there's an interview with Radiohead when they said when they were making OK Computer, they were listening to loads of Beatles.
They were listening to a lot of DJ Shadow, Queen, and the Beatles, weirdly.
Right. Yeah.
And Elvis Costello.
Right.
It's quite a strange playlist.
If you put them in a blender, what you get is And then I really, really love, I always get the name of it wrong. Is it The Wheels, Watching the Wheels Go Round?
The solo Lennon song.
Oh, I love that song. Someone someone tweeted about it not long ago, and I was like, God, I forgot how beautiful that song is. It's obviously all about him stepping away from everything and finding a different kind of happiness. I know it's not technically Beatles, but and to bring it full circle, I feel like it's with Yoko's influence that song was probably
all about.
It's a lot of. We were talking about Mind Games last week as well, and it was a record that I had dismissed a bit and overlooked. And revisiting that, and then listening to it this week in the context of it being the beginning of that sort of lost weekend, feel this sort of like, because a lot of the stuff in the lost weekend, you feel it's because it's when sort of John and Paul reconnected, and a lot of Beatles fans are like, you know, and that's when he went back to normal for a bit, and then it all went to shit when he got back or whatever. But actually, no, I think he needed to be kicked out by Yoko to sort of rebalance the relationship. And then after that, they just were so sweet together.
Yeah.
Like those final interviews with them, they're just like, you know.
Even the photos from that period, you know.
Yeah, they've lost that sort of rock star thing, and they've just become like quite sort of domestic and relatable.
It just sounded really sweet.
I think maybe what people don't like about that is because it reminds them of the inevitability of like growing up and becoming an adult, and you don't want John Lennon to be sensible. You want him to be, you know, erratic and mad.
Yeah, don't want him making a pasta bake and giving someone a piggyback, do you really? the idea of that is slightly underwhelming. But then he couldn't win because, you know, they didn't want him too far in the other direction. It's a very difficult. She was sort of, you know, although both damned if you do, damned if you don't, in a way.
Yeah. And it is strange to have someone who is so popular drawn to something so avant-garde as well, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's hard to imagine just the extremes of those worlds, I guess, you know.
It's the equivalent of Adele now hooking up with some kind of, I'm not saying Adele's the Beatles, but in terms of levels of fame and
levels
kind
of fame,
accessibility and stuff.
Do you know Jim O'Rourke, the musician?
Yeah.
Because he had a couple of kind of breakthrough records of doing very Burt Bacharach-y style, like folky, really beautifully arranged pop music, and quite Beatles-y in some ways. But he's really from an experimental background, and then he sort of played a couple of concerts where he just kind of did laptop noise stuff from all these people wanting this beautiful Bacharach style music.
Like, excuse me.
Yeah, but there's something of that where it's like, you know, that kind of it's sort of hard to tell your story to an audience, isn't it? And I think that's the thing with Yoko. It's like, you know, you pigeonhole people, don't you? It's like she's the one who broke up the Beatles, you know.
Well, people probably just want also, you know, it's an easier, clearer narrative, isn't it? Rather than being like, well, here's a group of people who worked very intensely together for a while and then wanted to do different things. It's much easier to vilify one person as if she was some sort of bomb that went off rather than the aging process and priorities and all of those things. And so much easier that she's a woman, you know.
Yes, yeah.
And not an English woman, so you can really go to town on it.
Yeah, I hope that it's really nice to have seen the narrative change over the last like 5-10 years, and I really hope that she gets sort of vindicated in the end, because she is incredibly impressive to have, and resilient and interesting, and just, you know, she's a complete one-off, and it doesn't get enough airtime.
She doesn't get enough airtime. She should be. There should be so much more positive discussion. I mean, I'm not saying nobody's perfect, but the you know, all these sort of so many figures through history in the art world, the music world, who've, you know, done appalling things and are still kind of revered or at the very least respected for what they've done, and that people are able to hold those two things in their minds at the same time, the sort of person and the work or the effect or whatever. But it just felt like everything was dismissed. It was just all kind of thrown out because of this relationship and this. Yeah, and I feel like she needs to be discovered with fresh eyes.
Yeah.
But
she said in Desert Island Dish, she said I imagine I'll be vilified again when I die. And I just thought, oh, what an awful thing to think, to be
so tragic.
Carrying that around with you, that even if there's been some respite now, that
I think hopefully she's wrong about that.
Yeah, kind of like the obituaries will say things like, although she is sometimes, you know, like, it's kind of like really weird way she's talked about. Yeah, that's really odd, isn't it?
And to have to think of yourself in those terms as this kind of ball to be thrown around, you know, it must be really, really strange. She was saying also that she doesn't want Sean to feel like he has to protect her. She's like, I don't want him to feel like he has to protect my legacy. It's too much work. Just let it go. So to have all those thoughts kind of in your mind, there's, you know, that's not a normal human experience to be thinking of of your own death in that way. So
yeah, that's bizarre.
But she's also bloody funny, so you know.
Yeah. Have you got some more tweets we could kind of? I suppose we could.
Yes. Yoko tweets. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was
will any of them be as good as the Britney Spears tweet? Do you know the Britney Spears tweet?
Which?
From 2011. Does anyone think global warming is a good thing?
Oh,
I love Lady Gaga. I think she's a really interesting artist. That's the best. The best tweet.
I mean, the next one to follow that is surely just sort of, I've just had some toast or something. That's the level where I love Britney. She's another one. She's another one.
She is. She has been vilified. Yeah.
I mean, she was unfortunate enough to have mental health problems before we started caring about them. That's all that happened to her.
Yeah.
It's like we've only softened in the last couple of years and we're all patting ourselves on the back. But God, we gave her a time of it.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think we need a collective apology for both of these people, really.
Yeah. We'll send
a card round.
Exactly. We could do what's those flowers you can post through the door in case they're not there? Bloom and Wild. I've just like I'm being sponsored by Bloom and Wild. What's that excellent make a flower? I believe they're doing a deal at the moment. Where for okay, some more Yoko tweets. I think I mentioned this one earlier. Who says there's a brick wall? There's no brick wall. It's all in your mind. Thank you. Let your instinct take you there, not your logical brain. I actually just quite like that one.
That's true. That's a good
one. You know, I'm not sure. Maybe sometimes trying to get from A to B, I'd probably go with logic.
trying to get to work.
the scoop the moon out of the water one as well is quite nice.
Although, that's nice.
Absolutely mad. Because she essentially says, scoop the moon out of the water. If you can't get it all, keep going till you've scooped the whole moon out, which, I mean, therein lies madness. It'll still be there when I'm, you know, 65, scooping the same bit of moon out of the water. But I do like that as an image. Just the other thing, she just deals in beautiful images, as did he.
Definitely.
You know, obviously they're soulmates. Yeah.
That was Gabby Best's own personal Beatles, and what a great episode that was.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. It was such a fun one. And yeah, as we said, great to come at it from a slightly different angle of Merkel.
Yeah.
And thoroughly enjoyable.
It was good. And I think it was really I always enjoy chats about experimental or sort of in brackets difficult music or difficult art, because I sort of think, maybe naively, that art is for everyone and that there's something, even in something that appears difficult, that people can enjoy and take something away from. And I think that's a big part of the Yoko story, is that kind of snobbery about, oh, it's pretentious rubbish kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's just really interesting to analyse those reactions and kind of debunk that way of thinking of it.
Yeah, and actually putting the playlist together, which you can find on our Spotify thing, which is just your own personal Beatles, I listened to quite a lot of that album that Moving Mountains is on, and I did actually get quite into it.
It's pretty bracing stuff, isn't it?
Not as much as I thought it was, actually. Mm. I was really preparing for it to be quite sort of screechy and, you know, a bit more deliberately abrasive.
Yeah,
but actually, there is a lot of sort of beauty in it, and it does kind of.
I mean, the stuff like that is so incredibly powerful on the emotions, I think. I mean, you have such a visceral reaction to that stuff.
I was on my lunch break today and I was listening to Gavin Bryars. Do you know Glorious Hill? Gavin Bryars is Glorious Hill?
No, I don't know.
It's so incredible. And I was wondering why I was just feeling so unbelievably depressed in Tesco Metro in Elephant and Castle. And it was because I was listening to that particular piece of music.
There's two reasons right there.
Well, I don't know. I think it was the Bryars.
Yeah.
Very sad piece of music.
I went back and listened to some of that Scott Walker stuff because I usually kind of stop around Scott Walker 3.
Really? What, you don't even like 4?
I mean, I do, but I don't own it on vinyl, so I don't tend to listen to it. But
3
I
is my favourite.
I haven't got as far as the more sort of challenging stuff. So I delved into that and had a little listen. It was really... You forget that actually, at the time, 3 might have even been quite...
Well, 3 has got... Yeah, 3 has got some quite... Not difficult, but it's kind of got some of those slightly unharmonious elements at the start.
Well, that's the in the opening track is It's Raining Today, which I've known for ages and loved, and I only realised when Tom York put it on his Desert Island Discs that it is... completely ripped off in How to Disappear Completely on
Today. That's interesting,
that sort of sustained note that is sort of gets really discordant and then resolves in that absolutely like transcendent moment. But it's literally, I don't know, it might even be a sample because it sounds identical.
I think it's really interesting following his career, particularly with that song It's Raining Today, because I really like the 80s album Climate of Hunter, which bizarrely Scott Walker appeared on like Saturday morning kids TV to promote, which is really weird because there's a song on Climate of Hunter, I think it's called Dealer, which is absolutely brilliant. It's called Dealer, it's the second song. It's one of my favorite Scott Walker songs, and that is almost like kind of, if you can imagine, an 80s version of It's Raining Today, whereas this kind of strange dissonance almost going running the whole way through the song. But Climate of Hunter's great, and Tilt is magnificent. Tilt is incredible, and that is what really where you're completely on the borderline between noise and more melodic stuff. And then The Drift is where it's kind of sort of firmly on the
it's a hard listen. I was listening to this week.
I mean, I love it, but it's like I wouldn't put it on at a dinner party.
No.
I don't know, I've never had a dinner party.
Well, there you go. The moral of the story is persevere. Otherwise, don't bother listening otherwise to something easy.
If it's easier not to, then just give up.
I also listened to quite a bit of Messiaen until it started giving me horrible sort of flashbacks to university. Some of that stuff is so beautiful. It's definitely worth we're searching out, and I've put a little selection of it on the playlist. But we'll stop bollocking on and leave you to it for another week. Thank you so much for listening, and for those of you who've got this far, and thank you so much. We've only got a couple of episodes left, so everyone who has donated, we're incredibly grateful. Someone this week asked me what the donations were actually for, and thought there's the implication being that we're sort of pocketing it, but it does, you know, it is an expensive endeavor, and we do have to pay for sort of hosting fees and the software that we use to record it and all the equipment and the website and all of that. So, you know, we'd love to come back and do a second series one day, and we'll
give me a second series.
So give us, make that more of a, you know, easy prospect for us. You can go to personalbeatles.com/donate and chuck us a couple of quid there. And thank you everyone who's rated the show on Apple Podcasts, especially. If you like it, please go there and give us a 5-star rating. If you write a nice review, we will read them. We really appreciate them. We might read out a couple on the show if they're particularly entertaining. And it really, it does help. It does help other people find it. It's not just ego stroking. So please carry on doing so if you haven't already, and then head there. We'll be back next week with the fantastic Josh Widdicombe, which is very exciting.
Exciting news. Yeah, that's great. A good episode.
Yeah, it was good. It was another sort of slightly can heavy one.
A little bit canny.
A little bit cammy, a little bit jammy. So we'll be back next Tuesday with Josh Widdicombe. And until then, stay safe. Thanks for listening.
Au revoir.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Your Own Personal Beatles is presented by Jack Pelling and Robin Allender. The podcast artwork is done by Morgan Ritchie. It's produced by me, Jack Pelling, and is a Homespun Sounds production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.